Okay, good evening, everybody. It's 8:32 on my watch.
Yes.
Just saying. All right. We Be'ezrat Hashem are going to fit. As I understand, this screen isn't functional tonight. Are we going to put this one up or no? Okay, so we've got handouts. Everybody has handouts? Good old-fashioned handouts? Lovely. All right. So we're going to use the handouts tonight to be able to get through all of this. We're going to hopefully tonight finish the perek, bring it to a close. What we're going to do is tonight we close the perek, if I can have your attention. Tonight we're going to close the perek. Next week, what I'd like to do, and don't when I say this, don't think, okay, I don't have to be here next week for this one. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to present the entire perek with an overview to be able to see what it is that we've learned and be able to see it in one vision. I encourage you to come for that one. If you've been investing in the shiurim thus far, it will help to be able to put all of it together and be able to have a bit more of a takeaway. We'll have a break the following week. The week after that, which is still pre-Pesach, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to present, I'd like to present, the Arba'a Banim, the four sons of the Haggadah, in terms a bit of Hilchot Deot, and how it is that we understand these personalities in a bit broader sense. I will tell you now, but we will send out the email, and I haven't even told Rabbi Zarum about this, that shiur is going to be an hour and 15 minutes. Ahead of time. In other words, I'm telling you right now, it's not going to be an hour, right? It's going to be an hour and 15, maybe 20 minutes. Because I've done it before, and I know that that's just the time that I need, and it's I don't want to rush at the end.
So you announced your Friday. In other words, on the 19th, there's no share.
Yeah, correct.
And the last share is on the 26th of March.
Right, so last year, it's probably not published, but the 26th of March will be the share that I do on the Arba Banim on the Four Sons. It will be recorded, but I'll do that share then. And then we have, I think, a date published for the month. Is it of May? Is it May?
April.
Is it April? It's post Pesach, but we're gonna. Yeah, that will. The Arba Banim will essentially finish the series, and we're gonna do the second perek as a new season. Right, so you'll get information about that. Let's get into the halachot here. So we spent last time speaking about the Hasid and Hasidut, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Rambam now is coming, if you think about it, I know it's hard to kind of imagine it, but if you think about it, the Rambam has thus far, for all intents and purposes, defined terms for us. He's told us what it means, what deot are. He's told us the different types of deot, how they function. When I say a de'ah is on one end or another end, what that means, what it looks like, what it is in us. He's spoken about the hacham as being the person that finds the derech emtza'i, the middle way. He spoke about the hasid as being a person who's able to maintain and control these things. He's mateh. The hasid pushes himself, removes himself, reveres as he or she wishes from to one side or the other side, as the situation requires. He then comes, having said all of this and having defined all that he's defined in this first chapter, he now says to us within the halachot, in hey, if you look at 5 bracketed 3, right, as we're looking on the back of the source sheets now, that back page of the source sheet, turn it over. This is the Rambam, okay? I mean, the Hilchot Deot that we're looking at. So we're looking at halacha hey, 3. We are commanded. You see that? Umetzuvinanu? Umetzuvinanu lalechet bidrachim elu. We are commanded to walk in these ways. We are commanded to walk in these ways. Which ways? Habenoniim. These middle of the road ways. So this is interesting because the Rambam has just finished saying what a hasid is. A hasid is not necessarily walking in the middle of the roadways. But nonetheless, the command to all of us, is to find that middle path, right? To find that middle road in where I find equilibrium in my attributes, in my capacity to be able to run my attributes and live and respond with them as the situation requires. That is our command. Hem, these ways, hadrachim atovim, v'aisharim. These are the good and straight ways of our lives, of the world. Shene'emar, as it says, how do I know that I'm commanded to do this? It says, v'halachta bidrachav. Walk in His ways. His, capital H, the ways of God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So the Rambam has already defined, he's already said, right, that this is not just the fact that I'm trying to find my own equilibrium or how it is that I'm supposed to run because it makes me a better person, which it does. There's an added element to this, which is really the focus of the entire thing. Because remember, he counts the mitzvot at the beginning, and he recognizes that the entire endeavor, the whole engagement in this discussion, is because of this mitzvah that he now mentions. And that is that we are required to do this, not because we are good people or just trying to be good people, but because we're walking in God's ways. We are essentially imitating, in our capacity, in human capacity, God. We are looking to God to see how it is that He runs the world. We are trying to fashion our lives after that. And we've explained why that is this way. In other words, why is it that when I look at myself in terms of equilibrium and finding balance, being able to judge my actions based on what situation requires, we've mentioned. That's what God does. God doesn't have internal attributes. God is just God. But it's a question of how it is that God acts in the world, and God always acts in the world and with His creations in terms of the creations and the needs of the creations. I mean, if God was acting in His full capacity, wouldn't be very much room for us at all, and we wouldn't be able to really stand. So there's this tremendous sensitivity on God's part, so to speak, with us in terms of how it is that He acts, what it is that He provides us, and in what capacity. He's always sensitive to the receiver and what the situation is at hand and what it requires. So that's what we're looking to do. Now, the Rambam elaborates on this. He says, this is the way the Hachamim understood this mitzvah. The Hachamim understood the mitzvah as follows. Take a look at 6. Kach lamdu beperush mitzvah zo. This is what they learned, the sages, in the explanation, the comment and their explanation and definition of this mitzvah. Mahu nikra hanun? Just as He, God, is called gracious, afata heye hanun. You be gracious. So notice the language over here because we're going to repeat it a few times. Just as He is called X, you be X. Why does it say it that way? Why doesn't it say just as He is X, you be X? It says as He is called X, you be X. Because we can't say that God is any of these things. It would limit Him. He isn't these things. He may act essentially in ways that we perceive as being these things. Yes? I don't know how long I have to spend a great deal of time on this. I don't want to tonight. But I'll simply say, I mean, if we look at God as existence, the source of being, Yud-ke, Vav-ke, then essentially it's a question of our interactions with the source of being and how we experience those interactions. And so there are times where the situation might make us feel like existence isn't really, you know, going our way. So what do you call that? Well, I mean, if you're a human being, you might say that, you know, it's just upset. He's upset. He uses those terms with us. God doesn't really get upset. This is where people get very confused and they don't understand. What does that mean? Well, I mean, if you think about it in truest terms, God doesn't get anything. He just God. He's perfect, pure, unchanging. But that's not something that's easy for us to comprehend, so I'm not going to weigh you down with that tonight. But the reality is that when we talk about God, we can't say that He is any one of these things, right? The way that the Rambam says it is that they're negative attributes, in the sense that we would say God is not not gracious. You follow? Right? Because we're not going to say that He is gracious, because that would be a definition. And we don't want to emphatically define God in any way because he's not defined, he's not limited, there are no limits, there are no borders, and so on and so forth. We're not going to say he isn't gracious. I mean, he's not gracious. Right? That's the best we can do. And so, we say that just as we call him this, and we call him this because of our perception of how it is that he is interacting with us, you be this. Because you can. A human being is capable of being gracious. Just as he is called Rahum, if we continue, Mahu Nikra Rahum, just as he is called merciful, you be merciful. Afata Heyer Rahum. Mahu Nikra Kadosh, just as he is called holy. Indeed, he calls himself holy in the Torah. You be so. Be holy. Okay. Those are the three examples that the Rambam gives. We're going to see a little bit later in the shiur that the Rambam quotes from the Sifre, from the Lashon of the Hachamim of Hazal in the Sifre, right? In their Perush of Dvarim. He then continues and he says, Al derech zo, in this way that I just explained, I showed you, right, which he's borrowing from the Hachamim, in this way, Karu ha-Nevi'im la'el b'chol otan ha-kinuyim. In the same manner that we just explained, the prophets referred to God in all of the terms that they use when they refer to God. When they refer to God in any particular terms, what they are saying is we call him this because we perceive him as this, not because he is this, but we can be this. So, we call him, for example, Erech HaPayim, which literally means long of face, right? Faces. Yeah. What it's saying is another way of saying that he's patient. He's not short-tempered. Rav Chesed, he is abundantly engaged or filled or does Chesed, what we would loosely translate as kindness. Tzadik, he's righteous. Yashar, he's a straight God. Tamim, wholesome, complete, consistent. Gibor, powerful. Hazak, strong. Kayotze Bahen, the difference between Gibor and Hazak. Gibor is usually the power of withholding and restraint. Hazak, the power of might. Yisharim, Ken, so he says, all of these, all the different attributes like those, what? Lehodia, she'elu derachim tovim visharim him, to show us that these things, when they talk about God in certain ways, we should be able to extrapolate that these are good things. Because if we're calling God by these attributes, then these are things that we should strive to emulate. They're calling God by these attributes because they are perceiving God acting in these ways in the world. And therefore, we want to be able to emulate these actions in the world. So we try to emulate these attributes. Hayav Adam, therefore, a human being is obligated. Lehanhig atzmo bahen, to lead himself, to lead oneself in these attributes. Meaning, tailor your life in this fashion. Build yourself this way. Ulhidamot, and to liken yourself to God, and the next two words are very important, kefi koho, as per your capacity. Not everybody has the same capacity, but like I said last time, we talk about doing our best very often, which isn't usually our best. Best, by definition, means the most that anyone can do. Yeah, and so that's what he's saying, kefi koho, as long as we're doing the most that we can do, well, then, we're doing the most we can do. Not everybody has the same range. But that's all that we're required. Can't do more than you can do, right? So this is what we're looking at tonight, right? These terms. There's one more point of the halakha. Well, we're going to look at the rest in a moment. We see what the Rambam is doing over here. He's saying, look, we have a command from God to emulate him. To build ourselves, our lives, our attributes based on the way that we see him, just as he is called merciful, gracious, kind, whatever it is, so too we should be those things in the most viable way, in the most appropriate way, as the Rambam explained in the previous elements of the chapter. So then he asks a very important question, right? How do you do this?
I just have one.
Yeah, please.
What about all the negative aspects, then?
Like what?
We should be angry because God got angry.
Right.
We should destroy because God destroyed.
Right.
Right?
Right. Why are you saying that those are negative?
Well, they're appropriate.
Right, they're appropriate. Right.
But he seems to only give particular ones. Are they universal, or how is he selected?
Well, I mean, it all depends. He when he talks about Hazak, or he talks about Gibor, or he talks about these things as Yashar, El Tamim, right?
So Gibor could be when...
Gibor could be when God's holding back and allowing things to fall apart. Hazak could be when God is acting with an outstretched arm and destroying nations. Biad Hazakah, Bizroa Netuya. Tamim could be, and Yashar could be where God is straight, and that he is faithful and wholesome, and that he is exacting retribution.
But he stressed so much against anger, and yet with Moshe,
yeah,
7 days of trying to...
So that the only reason I want to wait for anger with respect is because the Rambam treats that particularly. And we're going to see, you know, why it is, we have to study why it is that he treats it particularly and how he deals with Moshe and all of those questions. However, I think that what you're saying is that we will recognize certain attributes inherently negative, which they aren't necessarily inherently negative. If they are appropriate, then we would recognize them as constructive and positive. And that's essentially what the Rambam does at the very beginning of the Halachot, yes? In other words, the Rambam says there's people who get angry to this degree, and the people who don't respond and you know, are for all intents and purposes flatlining. You know, there's people. So the question is to find the appropriate behavior, which I think that's what we're looking at. But then the Rambam says, how do we do this? How do we get there? How are we supposed to do this? All right. So if we use the bicycle analogy that we had. Yeah, and where I'm riding and balancing on the bike, I'm not even thinking about balancing at a certain point because I just know how to do this. And that really what I'm thinking about while I'm riding the bike is, you know, where I need to go and how I want to get there and so on and so forth. I'm not focusing on balance. But before I get on that bike and I want to find balance, I need to focus on balance. And so you see like a little kid on a bike or whoever it is that's learning to ride a bike, and they're constantly twisting the wheel, the front wheel, right? Because they're constantly trying to correct for whatever side gravity is pulling them. Well, that's how we start. So the Rambam says, you know how to do what you do in order to be able to find a middle place, to find equilibrium? He says in Zion 1, 7:1, Kitzad yargil adam atzmo bedeot elu. How do you get used to these deot that we're recommending here, right? That he's recommending here. Ad to the point shikabu ubo, to the point that they become entrenched in you. They become part of you. It's the way that you end up acting. Well, he says, you know, you have to habituate. Make it habit. Yase, ishne, yeshalesh. Do it once, twice, three times. Meaning, over and over and over, b'ma'asim she'oseh al pi hader'ot ha'emtzayot. Notice here what he writes, very important terms. He says, act al pi. Al pi is based on the de'ot ha'emtzayot, the middle of the road attributes. Why does he say based on the middle of the road attributes? It's very strange terms. He should just say, act middle of the road, like he's been saying all the way up until here. This is the first time he says, al pi hadeot ha'emtzayot. Act based on what the middle of the road attribute should look like. What the Rambam is saying is, yeah, but we're not set up for that yet. I don't have middle of the road attributes. He says, yes, but you should know and sense what they should look like. In other words, you know them in someone else when you see them. Yeah, more or less, you hope. You know what riding a bike looks like. When you're doing it well, you should try to do that. You need some help? Okay, we'll talk about that. But the bottom line is that's what I'm aiming to do. And I'm aiming to act in the attributes that I find moderate, that ultimately I recognize as being manifesting from a place of equilibrium. That's what I want to try to do. I want to fake it till I make it. Yeah? I want to do it over and over and over again until I get there to the point that it is second nature to me, in the same way that riding a balanced bike is second nature to me. I'm no longer having to concentrate on correcting the front wheel to move the front wheel to correct for gravity. I do that without even thinking. It's second nature to me. You know, an amazing thing I saw they rigged the bike to where the front wheel turned, or the bike went in the opposite direction to where you turned the front wheel. So people that have been riding bikes with no problem, you know, they got on this bike and it was just a complete mess again. Because you realize that whatever it is that you learned to do in order to be able to find equilibrium and counterbalance the situation, you can no longer do because the situation has changed. The bike itself has changed. And so in order to be able to find equilibrium on that contraption, you have to remember to turn in the opposite direction that you want to go, which is counterintuitive, right? But it's only counterintuitive when you've learned to ride on a regular bike. Yeah. We do this all the time, right? It's a wonderful analogy, because what you realize is that when we say that one has to, calibrate one's attributes per situation required, it means that one must genuinely be in control of their attributes, because it's not just habitual. As a matter of fact, when it finally comes to it, you don't want these things to be simply habitual. You want the habit to be able to make them second nature to you, so that you are not having to think about how it is that you do it anymore. They're in your hands. It's in your capacity to be able to move it as necessary. It may take a little bit of practice when situations change to a certain degree that I'm not used to. I'll tell you when this happens in life. One of the ways that this happens in life is when the dynamics of family change. And it happens to all of us. So you get married. Shana Rishona. You know, you got the first year, which really, you know, okay, take the first year and figure out how to manage this thing, right? And the Torah requires, I mean, profound focus on that first year. You're not allowed to leave the city without your wife. You know, you're not allowed to do anything, go into work, you know, without her permission. Make sure that you know. I mean, there's details, but nonetheless, yeah. Your goal is v'simach et ishto asher lakach. You have to make sure that the state of this woman that you've brought into your household, which has been the classic system for it for all of human history, so don't start bothering me about the whole situation, right? Ultimately, it's another shir. But ultimately, you bring this woman into your household. She needs to be not just content and joyful, but in a state of happiness. That the life that she is living is in a state of happiness. The Torah, I mean, this is remarkable. There is no, you're talking about the Hammurabi code, there is no ancient code that even comes close to suggesting anything remotely like this. 3,000 years ago, our Torah is saying, you know what, you better make sure to spend time with your wife and make sure that she's happy and she's doing well and focus your time and your energy and so on and so forth. In any case, this is required, yeah? Now you have a kid. Bishah tova muslahat. Mabruk. Yeah? You have a kid. Completely changes the dynamic of what it is that you've learned to do. If you've learned to do it. Completely changes the dynamic. And then you know how they say, well, 1 to 2 is not such a big deal, but then 2 to 3, you know, that's all. It changes the dynamics. Because the family is a profound system that is very interplayed and interrelated. Okay, so now you've figured it out. You've got the, you know, however many kids, Ben Porat Yosef, Kanai Nahara, you've got the kids, they grow up. Dynamics change. All of a sudden they become more independent. Mom doesn't have to do the things that she used to have to do for everybody. Dad doesn't have to. Maybe has to start doing things that he didn't used to have to do. So on and so forth. The dial of family shifts. And what often happens is it throws us for a terrible loop because we don't shift with it. We don't shift our behaviors, our experiences, our thinking, and our interaction with the shift of the dial. So what happens is strife and friction. Fights happen, misunderstandings happen, all kinds of arguments and discord. It's all over. Then the children move out. Yeah. All of a sudden, time between you and your spouse is manifesting in situations that you never realized that you had before, since the first year that you got married, that all of a sudden you're older, you had kids, you did the whole thing, you're two completely different people for all intents and purposes. And the things that were not manifesting while the kids were covering the noise on their own, suddenly begins to manifest. You thought you had this down, right? You thought you had it down. You thought you knew how to do it. Everything was right. All of a sudden, kids leave, and it's an entirely new environment. They've turned the wheel of the bike on you, so that now you're turning it right. It goes left. This is the way we did it for 100 years. What are you talking about? Okay, now it's 101 years, and things are different. And that's just an example. That's just an example that so many of us experience in our lives. And we really don't know how to deal with it. Because we become used to doing what it is that we know how to do. And if we are not prepared to respond, not to what we know how to do, but what we must do, then we fail. And so that's essentially all involved in Hilchot Deot. All of what I'm telling you is not some new age, newfangled ideas and thinking. This is within Hilchot Deot, in the Torah itself, what it demands of us. So the Rambam is saying, in order to be able to get this working, at least in the bike that you're riding, you need to be able to habituate, because you can't constantly be focusing on balancing the bike. Find balance and then think, what do I do with this bike? That one can do when one finds basic balance. All right? It shouldn't be, as he says, torah. It shouldn't be a drag and where it's difficult to just have to ride it. It should be second nature, so that it's part of just the way that you are. You know how to ride a bike. Bear with me. Bear with me. Okay? I know it's a lot to read at once, but I really do appreciate you bearing with me. Thank you. Thank you. Follow to the end here, okay? Because this is going to be very important. Because what we're going to do with the remainder of our time is we're going to have to keep going back to text and be able to see what it is that's going on over here. The Rambam continues to close out the perek. He says as follows: Ufisha shemot ha'elu shenikra b'hena yotzer. Since these terms that we call God are also the middle road, min hem aderech ha'benonit. So the attributes, or as Rabbi Zarum was saying, you know, what are we talking about? Are we talking about positive attributes or negative attributes? We're talking about attributes manifest in the middle of the road. That's what we're talking about. Things that run properly, appropriately. She'anu chayavin alechet ba, that we are obligated to walk. These attributes, nikret derech zo, pay close attention, drum roll please. Drum roll please. This road that we are commanded to walk on is called the derech Hashem. It's the way of God. That's very serious. Because what Harambam is saying is, when we talk about the way of God, we're talking about emulating His actions. That's what it means to walk in His path. He says, and this we see used by God Himself in the Bible when He talks about, in the Torah, when He talks about Avraham Avinu. And his relationship with Avraham Avinu. He says, this indeed, this path of God, is the path that Avraham taught his children. And we know that he taught his children, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know this Avraham? Yedativ. I know this man. Achamim say, Yedativ, remember, Da'at is not just knowledge, it's connection and relationship. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I know this man, I am connected to this man, I love this man. This man, Yitzaved Banav et Beto Harav, he's going to command his children and his household after him, Lishmor et Derech Adonai. Sorry, V'shamru Derech Adonai. They're going to keep the path of God. To do what? La'asot tzedakah u'mishpat. Two attributes he puts out. To do righteousness and justice. Tzedakah u'mishpat. Proper judgments and righteousness. He only puts out two attributes. It's interesting. But it's clear here that what we are calling the way of God is our emulating of His actions, His deeds, His ways. Yes? Yes? This way is what Avraham taught his children. It is this way that we call the way of God, that we essentially, we find God defining in its broadest principles with two principles, two terms, tzedakah and mishpat, righteousness and justice. It's interesting, but that's how he presents it. Yes?
Aren't you now sort of redefining what the idea of a middle road is? Because if you're saying you have to emulate God, and the middle road is God, or rather...
the way that God acts in the world.
...is what we would call God. So there are some attributes which are always at an extreme, and that's how... So we would always call God honest.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, we call him truthful, yes.
Truthful.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's a word for honest in Hebrew, interestingly enough. But that's another issue. Go ahead.
But we must always be truthful, mm-hmm. or almost always truthful. So the extreme is on one side.
You're right.
I guess the interesting one is jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
Because God says, I am a jealous God.
Zealous.
Anyway, go ahead.
Some of the attributes we have to, the middle road
yes.
is on an extreme.
What I would say is some of the attributes require extreme for not only viability, but for connection to God. That too, we will look at in chapter 2. What the Rambam is doing over here, if I may, in my understanding of it, is he's setting out the default basic mode of living. And even in the attributes that the Rambam will later recommend to us that we should aim at an extreme with, he still says that living with those attributes in the middle of the road is still chokhmah. So even though I am obligated, and I'm jumping ahead here, so forgive me, I'm obligated not just to be humble, but to be exceedingly low of spirit, whatever it is that means, we'll look at it when we get there. The humble person is still a hacham. And he's still running in ways that are recognized as appropriate as far as society is concerned, as far as his life is concerned. The question with regards to engagement and connection with God and walking in his ways is a different question. So yes, you're right. There are going to be certain attributes that will fall or that will come more appropriately into an extreme. Very few. But the definition of the Rambam over here, for all intents and purposes, is that given across the board, in general terms, middle of the road is the way that God runs. With the world. Right? With the world. That's what we call it. Why? Because middle of the road is equilibrium. Equilibrium allows for you to be able to judge your actions as necessary. That's all. Remember what the middle of the road means. That's how we've been defining it up until now. Remember? Yes? Right? So it's not just balance. It's equilibrium in the sense that I am not dragged on either side, that my bike is not being pulled, that I'm running it, it's not running me. You remember that? Okay, so that's what we're talking about with regards to God. So we've got an issue over here. It's very nice that the Rambam ends, there's one more thing that he ends with at the, in the halachot. He says, let's read it quickly. He says, a person who walks on this path, you bring goodness and blessing to yourself when you walk on this path that we've just defined. Why? God says so. It says so in the Torah that I want Avraham, I know Avraham is going to command his children to walk this way so that I can bring on Avraham all of the good stuff that I promised I would bring him. But I need this. In other words, God is saying this has to happen in order for me to be able to give all of the good stuff that I want to give him. He has to be a viable, upstanding, walking on my way type of person. So it says, yeah, all that he had promised Abraham, what he had said he would bring to him. All right. So now let's look at something quickly. It says in our psukim, right, God is saying, Abraham is going to teach his children the Derech Hashem. Is this what happens? Seems so. We have Mesorah that that's what happens. We'll look very quickly at the sources. Turn the papers over. The Rambam uses this term Derech Hashem over and over again. He doesn't use it only in one place. So take a look at number two. Number two is Hilchot Kriyat Shema. The Rambam is asking why it is that we say Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuto Le'olam V'ayed after we say the first line of Kriyat Shema. We say that silently. Yeah, we say it right afterwards. So he tells a whole story about Yaakov Avinu before he died. He had all of his sons around his bed. He says to them, before I die, I want to know where your faithfulness philosophies and allegiance lie. And he says, are you with me in that God is one and that we are to walk in His way, in the Derech Hashem? And they all say, Shema Yisrael. Who's their father, right? He's Israel. Shema Yisrael. Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. He hears this and he says, upon hearing all of his children respond in unison, that they find the union, the unity of God. Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuto Le'olam Vayed. So that's a Masorah, right? How does he say it? Masorah Tibiyadenu, says the Rambam. It is a tradition in our hands. We have it handed. Masorah literally means it's handed over to us, right? It's been given over to us. Shebeshaa shekibetz Yaakov Avinu ibana b'mitzrayim, that at the time that Yaakov Avinu brought his children down to Egypt, b'sha'at mitato, at the time of his death, tzivam v'zirzam. Tzivam means he commanded them. Zirzam means he encouraged them. He charged them. Yes? Charged them. Al Yehud Hashem, on the unity of God. Ve'al Derech Hashem, and on the way of God. What's the way of God according to Rambam? That they're going to lead their lives this way. That they're going to watch and be Mahu Nikra Rahum. This is what he gives them before he dies. Yaakov Avinu, in number 3, Limed Banav Kulam, he taught all of his children. Whatever it was that he had from Avraham Avinu and all of the wisdom, Hivdi Levi, he set his son Levi aside, set him up as the head teacher. He's the headmaster of the yeshiva, he's the Rosh Yeshiva. Minau Rosh ve'oshiva b'yeshiva lelamed derech Hashem. What did he make him the Rosh Yeshiva to do? Teach the derech Hashem to the rest of the children of Israel. So this is key, I mean this is core. This is at the source and heart of all that we do. Walking in the way of God. What does it mean to walk in the way of God? It means we've got to get our attributes right. Our behaviors at equilibrium, our capacity to engage in this world as is necessary and required of us. When we do that, we can be said to be walking on the way of God, at least at the beginning, at least as our first definitions. You don't have that, we can't say that we're on the way. I mean, I'll leave that there. It's just what it is. It's an amazing idea, and it's an amazing point. Now, remember that the Torah says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look, I know Avraham, he's going to teach his children and his house after him to keep my way, he gives two attributes. What are the two attributes? Tzedakah u'mishpat. If we're going to look at all of the attributes, and there's many of them, right? We spoke about Hanun, Rahum, that's not in there. All of the attributes, and we're going to present them in paradigmatic terms or in broader principles and take derivatives from them. In other words, we're going to put out key categories of attributes and fill those categories with derivative attributes, yes? So, tzedakah might include A, B, C. Mishpat might include D, E, F, right? Whatever it is, but I'm looking at these broad terms. Question is there an attribute missing here in our broad terms? Is tzedakah mishpat all that I need as my broad principle terms? You follow my question? Yeah? It would seem that we're missing one here. It would seem that we're missing one. Let's have a look. I'll tell you why. And this is what we're going to do for the rest of the time. We have to understand this because it's a problem. It's a major one. It's a major one. Well, the Rambam, this is not the only place that the Rambam writes this. This is a mitzvah, isn't it? Well, you know, the Rambam wrote a book on the mitzvot, aside from this one. He wrote a book counting the mitzvot. And in his count of the mitzvot, he defines each mitzvah. Tells us basically what the requirement of the mitzvah is, how it manifests, and so on and so forth. So the Vehalachta Bidrachav is one of the 613 mitzvot. And you can be sure that as one of the 613 mitzvot, he counted this mitzvah in his book on the mitzvot. Not here in the Mishneh Torah, in his book on the mitzvot. How does he do this over there? Let's have a look. The way that he does it is in number 6. Happens to be the 8th mitzvah of the 613, at least in his count. And he says, HaMitzvah Shminit, the eighth mitzvah, Tzivui Shinstaven L'damot Le'or Kefi Echoltenu, that we have to be like him, compare, imitate him, God, as much as we can. Again, he says, Kefi Echoltenu, as per our capacity to do so. Hu Omro Yitale, how do we know this? Because it says in the Pasuk, what? Next word? Dz. Remember when you were in school and they did this to you? Yeah, I used to do that all the time to my students. It says it again in the Torah. Where? Lalechet bechol derachav. You are to walk in all of his ways. By the way, what's the difference between the first pasuk and the second pasuk? The first pasuk says, Ve'alachta bidrachav. Walk in his ways. Second pasuk says, Lalechet bechol derachav. Walk in all of his ways. What's the difference? Yes, indeed. Remember that. Put that in the back of your head for a moment. We're going to come back to it. Walk in all of his ways. How do the Hachamim explain this? Just as God is called merciful, you be merciful. Sound familiar? Yes. So far, so good. Okay, we've heard this before. Just as he's called Hanun, you be Hanun. He's called Tzadik, you be Tzadik. Doesn't mention this in the Mishneh Torah, but he does mention Tzedakah Mishpat, right? So Tzadik, he mentioned Tzadik, he says that there's Tzedakah Mishpat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nikra what?
Chesed.
Hasid. Af Ata Heyeh Hasid. Just as God is called Hasid, you be a Hasid. Well, that wasn't mentioned. I mean, last week we read about the Hasid. But once the Rambam brings in Vehalachta Bidrachav and says that we're commanded to do this, he doesn't really mention anything about God being a Hasid and you, or God being called a Hasid, you need to be a Hasid. What's more, is when he brings the Pasuk about Avraham Avinu and that Avraham taught his children and all of that, nowhere to be found here. Doesn't mention it at all here. Look what he says. He continues. He says, that's the Lashon of the Sifrei. That's what the Sifrei writes. And the Rambam is essentially quoting the Sifrei verbatim. This is exactly what the Sifrei says. The only difference between the Rambam and the Sifrei actually quotes Psukim for each one of these. God's called Tzadik, here he's called Tzadik. God's called Hasid, here's where he's called Hasid. It brings Psukim. Kvar kafal tzivui zeh b'lashon acher. It said it again, in different ways. Amar ahare Adonai Elohechem telechu. Walk after the Lord your God. Says it all over. I mean, this is a major thing in Torah that we're supposed to do, right? Gam bepirusho ba she'inyano lidamot lemaasim hatovim velemidot hanichpadot, that we are commanded to follow his actions and his attributes shebahem mituar yitaleh, that he is described. Al derech hamashal, he is described as such in borrowed terms, obviously. Yeah? Because he is yita'ale ala kol ilui rav, he is above all of this, far beyond any kind of definition. That's the Rambam's presentation of the mitzvah. What's missing? Avraham Avinu, his kids, the whole thing. Tzedakah mishpat, yeah? So, it's an interesting issue. The Sifrei is indeed exactly this way. The idea of tzedakah mishpat comes all over the place in Torah. They're good friends, Tzedakah U'Mishpat. But there is one attribute that's missing. What was missing in terms of the Sifrei in the Mishneh Torah? Just as God is called Hanun, you be, that's there. God is called Rahum, you be Rahum, it's there. Even Tzadik, although he doesn't include that particular one, he adds Kadosh, which is interesting, right? Still Tzadik is spoken about, we have Tzedakah U'Mishpat, Tzedakah is done by the Tzadik, that's there. What's missing? Hasid, which means chesed is missing. That's a big one. It's nowhere to be found, at least not in the Mishneh Torah. The interesting thing is that pretty much everywhere else we look, tzedakah mishpat, righteousness and justice, is always accompanied by chesed. It's the big three, not the big two. Take a look. Take a look in number 4. in Jeremiah and Yirmiyah. You got it? Koamar? Thus said the Lord. Koamar Adonai, so says God. Al yitalel hacham bechokhmato. A wise man should not praise himself over his own wisdom. Al yitalel gibor gvurato. The powerful man, the strong man, what have you, the mighty man, should not praise himself over his might and strength. Al yitalel ashir beoshro, a wealthy man, should not praise himself over his wealth. Ki im bizot yitalel hamitalel. If one is going to praise, one should praise only on account of this. And what is that? Haskel viadoa oti. That they know and think of, they have the conception of me. They know me. Ki ani Adonai. I am God. But when it's written here, it's ani Adonai yod kevavke. I am being. I am the source of all things. Ose, and I do what? Go ahead, you read it for me. Chesed, mishpat, utzdaka, ba'aretz, in the land, on earth. I do chesed, mishpat, utzdaka. That's what I do. Is that the only thing he does? Certainly not. But those are the paradigmatic principles of God's actions in the world. Three major things. Ki be'el, what does he say about them? Beautifully, ki be'ele hafatzti. That's what I want. It's what I'm looking for. It's what I desire. So beautiful, good. So chesed tzedakah mishpat. Why does the Rambam leave chesed out of his treatment of the halachta? He says, we are commanded v'halachta bidrachav, just like Avraham taught his children. What did he teach his children? Tzedakah mishpat. Where's the chesed? And by the way, like we said last time, of all people who should leave out chesed is Avraham. He's supposed to be the paradigm of chesed, isn't he? You told me that last week. And it is what we understand Avraham to be. He is the paradigm of chesed. As the Pasuk says, Tenemet Yaakov, chesed l'Avraham. Avraham, chesed is his midah. So what are we going to do about this? That's in number 12, by the way, that Pasuk, if you want to see it. It's an issue. The funny thing is that the only place that the Rambam leaves out chesed is in the Mishneh Torah. Every other place that he speaks about this, he includes chesed. He spoke about it in terms of the Sefer HaMitzvot. He includes Mahu Chasid, Afata Chasid, and the Chasid by definition is the person who's able to practice and live in chesed, right? We had a whole treatment of it last week. Leaves it out. Why does he leave it out? So we have to understand, what do we mean again when we say chesed? We're going to have to look at this carefully in terms of this. Why it would be that the Rambam would leave it out? Take a look at number 5, please. In the Moreh Nebuchim. The Rambam talks about this in the Moreh Nebuchim. He talks about these three things, these three attributes as being the big three of through which or from which everything else essentially is derived. Basically, one could say that all of our attributes could essentially be categorized within one of these three. He says, Perek Zeh, I want to tell you that this chapter, I want to define three terms, he says. What are the three terms? It's the very end of the Moreh Nebuchim, incidentally, right? I want to define three terms. What are they? Chesed, Mishpat, Utzdakah. I want to define Chesed, I want to define Mishpat, I want to define Tzedakah. He says, look, Chesed, I already told you, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit and then we'll read the bolded terms. Right? He says, look, chesed is when you're doing either more than necessary for someone or something, or doing something in where it's not merited at all. It's not necessary, you're just giving. In a place where gift is not necessarily even warranted or any element of it is looked for. You bestow something where there was no need to bestow. Yeah, so it's either where there's no need at all or beyond the need that's necessary. That's chesed. He says, you know where God does chesed? You know where we see his greatest chesed? Creation. Wasn't necessary. There was absolutely no need for it. He didn't need it, that's for sure. God needs nothing. The very creation of the world itself is what we call chesed. Why? It's totally over and above anything that's necessary. It wasn't necessary. It's completely astonishing. It's beyond all things that we would... it's not required. He just did it. Why? Because he did. That's why. So therefore, the Rambam says, that is the ultimate chesed. And he says, take a look at the bold. Ulfichach, kol tova haba'a mi'ito yit'aleh nikrat chesed. All good that comes from God, ultimately we call chesed. Amar hasdei Adonai azkir. As we say, I will speak of the hasadim of God. I will remember them. I will bring them out, speak of them. Ulfichach, kol ha'mtziyut hazo. Therefore, please pay close attention. I'm telling you, if you are sleeping now, so help me. I will take off my shoe. Be very careful. Focus on what I'm reading here on the next lines. Yeah? Ulfichach. Therefore, kol ha'mtziyut hazo. All of existence. All that exists. Klomar, in other words, in case you don't get what I'm saying, says the Rambam, Hamtza'ato yit'ale ota. The very fact that God brought it into being. And it's not just that he brought it into being, but as the Rambam says at the beginning of Yesodei HaTorah, he's mamtzi kol nimtza. He doesn't bring it into being only. He maintains the being constantly. That is what we call chesed. As it says in the pasuk, Olam chesed yibaneh. A world of chesed is built. What does it mean, says the Rambam? Inyano, what it means, binyan haolam. The very building of the world itself is in and of itself a chesed. You hear this? It's astonishing. Ve'amar yitale b'tiur midotav. And therefore, we call God, as one of his attributes, Rav chesed. He is abundantly chesed. He's a chassid. Pause. Let's absorb what we're saying over here. Where do we find God's chesed? Anywhere where he gives anything. He says all of the tov of God is his chesed. Where's the fundamental chesed? In the very nature of existence itself. Meaning, the way the world, the universe, is chesed. Beautiful, yes? Yes, except that we've got one problem. How on earth am I supposed to look at gravity, right, the curvature of space, and deduce from that ways in which I should walk in my life? I mean, it's a little complicated, isn't it? I mean, it's one thing to say God feeds the birds and therefore I will feed others. Great. You know, that's relatively easy. What am I supposed to learn from gravity? Stay home? It's clearly one of his attributes, is it not? I mean, it's one of his ways, isn't it? Do you remember the Moreh Nevuchim that we read and where Moshe asks God, show me your ways? It's on the pages as well. I'm sensitive to time, but remember what he says. He says, show me your ways. God says, I will show you my ways. I'm going to pass before you kol tuvi, all of my good. What was kol tuvi? The entirety of creation. Because it says, Vayar Elohim et kol asher asah, God saw everything that he made. Vine, tov me'od, kol tuvi. I saw everything I made. He saw everything he made, found that it was good. Kol tov, all of his good, is the entirety of creation, says the Rambam. So what am I looking at? And that was a response to Moshe asking him for his drachim, for his ways. And what are we talking about over here? Not the Derech Hashem? Yeah, we're talking about the Derech Hashem. And we said very clearly that the Derech Hashem are the attributes, didn't we? All runs beautifully. Kaftor v'ferach. And so what you're telling me in that Moreh Nevuchim is that your ways is the existential reality of the universe. The way that the Rambam says is every single detail of the universe and its interconnection this with that. I'm showing you, Moses, the matrix of all of creation. Those are my ways. Well, that's the chesed, isn't it? I mean, at the very least. I'm also seeing in those things what it is that God does within that as part of the ways. Yeah, sure. I'm seeing the justice. I'm seeing the righteousness. I'm seeing the charities, so to speak, that God does in the world. The kindness that God bestows in the world. Those are all things that God does in the world. But what about the world? What he's saying over here, the Rambam, again and again, is that the world itself, the very nature of the universe itself, is an attribute. Which attribute? Chesed. It's what God made. It's something he did. And he is expressed in that very creation. Meaning that the nature of reality itself is an expression of chesed. Why? It wasn't necessary. At all. Great, beautiful, lovely, except for one problem. How am I supposed to walk that way in my life? What am I supposed to do? It's a problem. It's a problem, but it's not an insurmountable problem. I mean, you know, what am I supposed to do with photosynthesis, you know? What kind of moral implications am I supposed to take from that? Yeah, I mean, that's much more complicated, isn't it? Who knows, you're getting it right. It's much easier to be able to say, look, you know, I mean, we need to be kind, we need to be good, we need to be strong. We certainly look at the Torah to be able to see how the prophets call God, don't we? I mean, we're looking at them to guide us to see what they're seeing in the world. I mean, you know, we're not even left to our own devices to look at how it is that God acts in the world. We're not 100% sure. So we hope that the Nevi'im teach us. We hope that the Torah teaches us. We hope that Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. Look at these things that God's doing. We look at that as guide. It becomes our frame, our lens. We call God this and that and this and that and this and that because it is what we see him doing. Beautiful. Great. We can manage that. It's really hard. I mean, it's not easy even for us to manage that. I mean, you know, think about riding this bike that the Rambam is putting out for us. I don't know. We're a little bit worried that we're not going to be able to manage to ride it so well. But we're going to be brave. We're going to be strong. We're going to try to ride this bike. Throw chesed in there? That's a whole other story. Only chasidim. Yes, you understand why it's a problem? Do you understand why? I'm going to give you an example. I'll give you an example so that you have a sense of what it is that I'm saying. Okay? And I'm going to say, after saying this example, or before saying this example, this is by no means the definition of what it is that I'm understanding it to be. It's only one way of looking at it. But I'm going to give you a way that we can learn possibly a lesson from something that we see in terms of the way the world works. We know that throughout the world, right, the majority of species in the world reproduce through sexual reproduction, correct? The vast majority, I mean, you know, overwhelming majority. Which means what? It simply means that on a genetic level, my full genetic code is cut in half and shared with an alien genetic code. Half of another alien genetic code. And through that, I produce offspring. Yes? That's what we call sexual reproduction. That is as opposed to asexual reproduction, which is for all intents and purposes cloning. In other words, I have a full replica of my entire genetic information. Strangely, interestingly, the world has developed, God created a world in which sexual reproduction is the overwhelming mode of reproducing genes. So what I'm looking at is I'm finding that in order to be able to reproduce my genetic code, keep it going, something counterintuitive happens. If I were to be left to my own device, it's very likely that I would think, at least initially, that the best way to reproduce my genetic code is to reproduce my genetic code. Many of us think that when we have kids, that's exactly what we're doing. We think we're creating little clones, contrary to popular belief. And instead what we do is we strip half of our information and toss it, and use only 50% of it, and then find some alien DNA to be able to couple it with in order that I should be able to reproduce my genetic code. It's insanity. And yet that's the way that it happens. Why? One of the reasons for this is because if in my genetic code I have a flaw or a mutation of sorts, and the way that I reproduce is through cloning, I never get out of it. But if I strip away half of my genes and couple it with alien genes, the odd thing is, the odds and possibilities for my genetic code to be able to reproduce has better odds, not worse, and maintain itself intact. Great, lovely, wonderful. Okay, what do I learn in terms of my morality? I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. One thing that one might recognize is, well, you shouldn't try to clone yourself. The openness to different possibilities might be actually viable rather than the threat that one thinks it is. Problems within a system are only exacerbated when there is no external input. These are all just my pontifications, right? My hypotheses, which could, I'm sure, easily be thrown out by any number of people. But I'm giving an example. But that's not an easy thing for most people to deduce, right? Most people are not sitting in the genetic class, right? They're looking, learning about genes and reproduction, thinking, oh my gosh, I better open up my board to different opinions. Nobody's doing that. Very few people are doing that. Very few people are looking at the nature of the world itself, how reality functions, thinking, okay, what are the implications? What are the implications? What of viability? Because that will always be the question. If I see how it is that the world is working, then I can sense something about viability. You know where this really takes off? In an area of technology called biomimicry. Look it up. In where nature is studied in order to be able to solve technological problems. So if I have a super train that is running at speeds that breaks the sound barrier, how do I deal with that in the most efficient and least disruptive way? Well, I actually found birds that fly at full speed into the water without breaking the surface tension to be able to get the fish. How do they do that? I don't know, but let's study them and figure it out. So you say, okay, that's about technology. It's not moral. Can I extrapolate it to morality in the sense of viability? Yes, it's possible. It's extremely difficult. But do you follow where I'm going with this? I see nobody moving their heads. Okay, I'm very, very fine. What I'm saying is that one can look at the nature of how things work in a world and recognize elements of viability in it and therefore understand that the way I might need to live has to be sensitive to what it is that I'm observing in the world. But to do that, to draw it from its place in the world and how it functions into practical application is not a straightforward line. It takes tremendous sophistication and thought to be able to translate hasadim that I see in a world into practical action that is actually morally, ethically, and viable, more ethically viable in the world. You follow what I'm saying? I hope so. If not, listen to the recording. Yeah? The Rambam, I am suggesting, does not include chesed in his presentation of Hilchot Deot because he's not talking to Hasidim at this point. He tells us what a Hasid is, but he's not talking to Hasidim at this point. You know who else isn't talking to Hasidim at this point? God. When he talks to Avraham, he's not saying what Avraham's doing, because what Avraham does is what I just explained to you. I mean, Avraham discovers God from looking at the world without a Torah, for goodness sakes. One of the reasons why you look at him is being such a phenomenal individual. I mean, he is the ultimate Av. But what is he teaching his kids? He's teaching his kids tzedakah mishpat. Why? Righteousness, justice, it's what you do in a world. And that's much easier to deduce. Is to see what it is that you do in a world that makes a world work. That's like what we call derech eretz. What interactions work between human beings? What is justice? What is righteousness? How do I engage with others in a way that shows charity, that shows care, that shows just sense, right? What is right and what is wrong? That I can do relatively easily. It may not be tremendously easy. I learned how to do this. I've got to steady the bike. But what is extremely difficult is to start looking at the curvature of space and deducing how it is that that implies to the nature of how I live my life in reality. That's much more sophisticated and complicated. You following? It's there. It's one of the attributes, but it's left for the Hasid. Yes? Okay. What I'm going to then do in the next class is I want to talk about this. It's only going to be at the beginning of the class. I want to talk about this and the implications of love. because it's how the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't talk about it here, but he does talk about it. He waits till the end of his book on Da'at, which is not just Hilchot De'ot, it's all of the first book of his 14, and he talks about it in the laws of Teshuvah. And he talks about it at the end of the laws of Teshuvah. That when a person reaches that level of love and knowledge of God, a person begins to be able to look at a world in those terms, and where he can even bring chesed into the actions that a person does. Now, we can do very basic chesed, gemilut chesed, which is where we're giving people perhaps more than they deserve. But even that's very dangerous, because we have to very much sense, right, what are we doing to that person, how much are we taking away from that person when we give that person, and so on and so forth. But when we're talking about looking at God's chesed, which includes the very creation of the world itself, what's actually going on in creation, extrapolating that into walking in his ways, that's much more sophisticated. That's not put here in Hilchot De'ot. God doesn't put it in to Avraham teaching his children. Avraham's one thing. His children, what do I expect him to teach? Tzedakah u'mishpat. That level of looking at a world this way, that's a very high level of looking at the world. It's not for everybody. But we do expect the Hasidim to do it. They've got to look at the world. We do expect that the highest members of the society are not only stopping at tzedakah mishpat, but they're looking at the very nature of reality itself and understanding the implications on viability in life from the way that it works. That's the system. Good evening. Good evening. Okay. Rabbi Hananiah ben Akasha omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezukot Yisrael, Lefikach herbar nanam Torah, Sibot Shemar, Vahavesh Man Zidko, Yagdil Torah, Vyadir, Yitgadal,